On the Bookshelf with your host, Dave Doc Kirby.
This is a very special weekend. It's the weekend following St. Patrick's Day. And as an Irish American, I always like to do something special for St. Patrick's Day on this program, which is, this is now its 31st St. Patrick's Day weekend that we've had a chance to talk to folks. And today our very special guest is somebody whose book is a little different, but I think you're going to really enjoy hearing about it. We're welcoming Ned Bustard, who is a graphic designer, a children's book illustrator, an author, and a printmaker. He is the creative director for Square Halo Books, Inc., and curator of the Square Halo Gallery, has lectured at colleges, schools, churches, and conferences. His work is found in numerous titles, including St. Nicholas the Gift Giver, The O in Hope, Revealed, a storybook Bible for grown-ups, Every Moment Holy, and his brand new book, St. Patrick the Forgiver, retold and illustrated by Ned Bustard. It is from IVP Kids. Ned, thank you. This is your first chance to be with us on the Bookshelf, and I'm delighted to welcome you to the show.
I appreciate the invitation. It's good to talk to another Irish American about such an important topic as this.
Absolutely. You are, third-generation American? Your Irish is a lot closer than mine is. I think my folks came over after the potato famine. But
I take great pride in all that, so yes.
Me too. When you were a kid, did your parents go to St. Patrick's Day parties and that kind of stuff, or did you do stuff around the house with shamrocks and that kind of thing?
Right. With my family, we didn't do parties as much. It was more, we would talk a lot about being Irish because my great-grandfather had come over, my great-grandmother had come over, and then even on my grandmother's side, they had come over relatively recently. So it was kind of in our conversation. And then for St. Patrick's Day, we would make it a habit to all dress in green. And on Orangeman's Day, my grandmother was born on Orangeman's Day, we'd wear orange. We're playing both sides of the theological and political fence there. And
right.
Then we also would do something fun. My mom would have us make Irish potatoes, which is a candy. It's like powdered sugar and coconut and cream cheese wrapped, made into little balls and wrapped up and rolled in cinnamon. And they're super, super decadent and fun. And we would do that. And then my grandmother would make us Irish soda bread, which my wife got the recipe, and also the old cast iron pot that my grandmother would make it in. And she now makes it for me and my children and family and friends. Now she's changed the recipe a little bit. She's added a little bit more sugar and golden raisins, so it's a lot more fun to eat than it was when my grandmother made it.
Yes, indeed.
Those are some of the things we do.
Oh, that's really neat. So obviously, St. Patrick was a person of whom you had heard from a young age. And then St. Patrick was a real person.
Yeah, I mean, that's one of the things that I think is hard for us to get our heads around sometimes with folks, because we think about saints and you know, we're all kind of chronologically landlocked in the States here. You know, we only can think back 200 or 300 years. So for us, it's sometimes hard for us to get our heads around this realness of these folks. One of the things that I have in the book, I have illustration of St. Patrick, and he's got a bell, and it's a little bronze bell that he's ringing in throughout the book. And that is actually, there's a real bell. If you go to Ireland in the museum in Dublin, you can go and see St. Patrick's bell. I wanted to include that because I thought, you know, it's hard for us to really believe in someone like St. Patrick.
Right.
Because it's like, well, it's just too far back, too abstract of a thought. So that's one of the things I really wanted to do with this book, is really root in the concreteness of time and space so that kids could really get their heads around that as much as possible.
Right. I mean, he was born a long time ago, 385. Around 400, he ends up being kidnapped and sold as a slave in Ireland. The story of St. Patrick the Forgiver, isn't it? The wonderful thing about Patrick is not just that he had an incredible adventure, but that despite the fact that he was held as a slave, he goes back to convert the people who enslaved him.
Yeah. That was a thing when we were talking about doing the book with IVP Kids that we really quickly settled on that, like, here's the real story. I mean, a lot of times we think about St. Patrick and I don't know, we lump in leprechauns and all kinds of things. But the real focus of his life is one of turning back and reaching to the folks who had enslaved him, and forgiving them and bringing the gospel to them.
Now, you have produced a children's book with particularly fascinating illustrations, and that's what you do as well as be an author, that this is your signature line-of-cut artwork?
Yeah, it's line-of-cut. A lot of times when people look at the work, they say, oh, that's a woodcut, which is it's basically the same thing, same technology, but instead of carving out of wood, I carve out of linoleum. It's an artist-grade linoleum, not quite the stuff that I don't rip up my kitchen floor to create the work. But yeah, it's a real traditional way of making images. I often laugh when people see my work. They say, "Hey, I did that in seventh grade," and I'm like, "Yes, you did," because it's just a very easy technique to learn. And so a lot of times, folks will learn it in junior high and such to get that feel. And it was something that I embraced. I'd taken printmaking in college, promptly forgot it. And then later on, it's like maybe 15, 18 years now ago, I met a guy came to our church who had his MFA in printmaking. And we became friends. And I said, oh, you should teach me how to do this, because I was doing all of my work on the computer, and I was happy to for the efficiency, but I really liked the idea of making something that I could get my hands dirty, literally, with, and that it was just a little bit more tactile, a little more rooted. So that's why I do the line of cuts. I mean, I do other illustration styles, but that's the one that people seem to know me for now.
I found that fascinating because when my mom and dad were art majors at Florida State, and when we were little kids, my brothers, my sister,
my friend who taught me art, he went to Florida State. So there you go, another connection right there.
Absolutely. Well, and what they decided to do one year was to make our own Christmas cards, and so they got a little. My dad ended up being an architect. He couldn't make any money as a cartoonist in 1953, so he became an architect. But he had scraps of things all the time, so he took scraps of linoleum, carved them into kind of squares, gave each of the older kids one with a gouging tool, and said, okay, draw a simple Christmas scene, and we're going to help you gouge this out. Then we'll get black ink on a roller, right, and roll it on there in reverse image. You put it on the cardstock and let it kind of set, and then pull it off carefully, and ta-da, you'll have these things. And we had such fun with that. I can still remember, that was a very long time ago, but we had such fun with it. And one of the really sweet things, when my folks both had passed and we were cleaning out the house, I found the box with those little linoleum tiles.
Wow.
and the roller still, you know. So it's a lovely memory. So this is a wonderful technology. It's not really difficult at all. A wonderful thing for parents to do with kids, I'm thinking.
Oh, yeah. In fact, sometimes I'll encourage folks, if they don't want to invest in the equipment, though it's very inexpensive, that you even can kind of experience the same process by taking like the styrofoam trays that you get with like hamburger or such, and then use a ballpoint pen and gouge into that, and then put ink on it. So it's a really, really basic, easy thing to do. And in fact, someone just recently said, oh, I'd love to try it. You know, what do I have to buy? And I'm like, you know, it's really, really simple. You don't have to do a whole lot with the spec, but the end result is rather magical, and it's fun to do.
We're talking to Ned Bustard, who is the a retailer and the illustrator of St. Patrick the Forgiver from IVP Kids, which is this a revamped imprint, or is this a brand new?
It's brand new. Like in college, I was involved with InterVarsity and bought books from them for years and years and years. But their new IVP Kids is a brand new imprint, and it started during COVID. They had the idea that they would start this kids line. They had never done that before. And it's kind of a neat experience for me because their first book that came out was St. Nicholas, the Gift Giver from me. But I didn't know that they were doing kids books at all. And in fact, my first exposure to them was not through that. You mentioned the book, The Owen Hope by Lucy Shaw. That was how I got connected with IVP, which is also a very long, convoluted story. But they basically, I came across her poem and thought it should be a kid's book. And this is something you tell people, you never do spec work or pro bono. I'm sorry, let's say it again. When I came across her poem, I thought this should be a kid's book. And I promptly went about ahead and illustrated it. They tell you never to do work like this. You don't do spec work. You always get paid. But I was like, this just needs to be a kid's book. And I sent it to her, and she was quite taken with it, and then sent it to some friends at IVP because she had worked with them before and said, isn't this marvelous? And they said, yeah, it is. In fact, no one knows this. This is a secret. We're about to start a kid's imprint, and could we have this as a book? And she wrote back to me, and she said, would that be okay? I said, well, of course. I would love to have that come out. And that's why I made it. And so during the process of working with them to get the Owen Hope together and published, I pitched them on the idea of St. Nicholas. And then they ended up making that their first book.
Wow, that is awesome. Nate, now you've got a pretty interesting history yourself. Your interest in history, I should say, it goes back some time. You went on a short-term mission trip to Ireland when you were in college.
Mm-hmm.
Your wife is a history teacher, and you guys love museums, old castles, cathedrals, monasteries, etc. And then two and a half years ago, you went to Northern Ireland and went to the village of Kells. So you've done your footwork in Ireland itself. As well as growing up in an Irish-American family and knowing about St. Patrick. All of these things kind of help you really do a wonderful job in choosing the right things to talk about when you talk about St. Patrick.
Well, and it also impacts the illustrations, which, of course, folks are listening to all this, so they can't really get the full experience. But one of the things when I was illustrating the book, this idea of wanting to really root it in reality was important to me, especially because both the St. Nicholas and the St. Patrick book include legends from both saints. So when I could, I tried to really make it real. And one of the things that was fun for me is when I was over in Ireland, I came across different landmarks. I'd had gone to Kells. I saw there's this neat monastery, Nendrum Monastery, that I went to. And actually, part of the structure of one of the buildings I saw when I was over there, I worked into the illustration. So there's different things. At one point in this book, he comes across a giant who he baptizes. And in the story that I based that on, I found this old collection of legends of St. Patrick, and there was this giant who was under these large rocks, and Patrick evangelizes him, and he wants to become a Christian, and he baptizes him. But what I did is I had just been to Ireland. I said, well, I went to the Giant's Causeway. I thought, this is fantastic. I'm going to bring this into the book. And so I actually have the giant, instead of under just random rubble, he's actually under the Giant's Causeway. And so, you know, for folks who know a little bit about Ireland, or for my girls, we homeschooled them. So I'm always looking for ways to bring history and education opportunities in there. So it's one of those things that if you know, then you can really, say to your kids, oh, isn't this neat? Let's type in Giant's Causeway on the computer and get photographs and really do that deep dive. In the end of the book, he's raising one of those Celtic crosses, one of the stone crosses, the high cross, and he's he's setting it up at a church, and I based the design of that off of an actual high cross in Donegal. So there's all these things that my wife and I are both history nerds, and we just love all those neat facts that I want to bring as much of that into my books as possible, so that folks can really get the whole experience.
Right. Well, I think that's really critical, because since he lived 1,700 years ago,
quite a while,
it's hard for modern Americans or modern Irish, for that matter, to really connect with him. But Patrick was a fascinating character, and maybe since America's primarily Protestant these days, when we hear saint, most Protestants go, we don't believe in saints, and they dismiss them, and that's a shame, because this is a guy who was really a wonderful thing. Tell us the story of Patrick.
One of the things that was interesting for me, talking about not knowing who he is or being Protestant and kind of poo-pooing things, we have some friends over in Ireland and that we made on our recent trip. And when I was working on this book, I sent them early drafts to get their feedback. And they were all my friends there are Protestants. And they looked at it, they said, well, this looks fine and everything, but we don't really know anything about St. Patrick. And you're like, well, you live there. How could you not know anything? But yeah, if you think about how far back, I mean, we're talking late 5th century, it's certainly not something that folks are automatically connected to. One of the things about Patrick that's neat is he is not actually Irish. He was born in England, and at that time it would be Britannia, because it was part of the outer edges of the Roman Empire.
Right.
And he was raised in a Christian family, though he wasn't a Christian himself. His grandfather was a priest, and his father was a deacon, and they were involved there. Pirates came, probably Vikings came and stole him away and sold him into slavery in Ireland, and he lived there for several years tending sheep. He was a slave shepherd, and it was while he was tending sheep that he had an encounter with God and was converted, and spent all his time with sheep and praying and sheep. And it says, and he wrote in his confession that a vision came to him that the Lord said to him that he was going to get to go home and that he should leave right now. And he did that and walked, I think, around 200 miles southeast, and found a port town, was able to talk some sailors into letting him on board. They sailed back to England. They got lost for a while. There's an incident in while they're trying to find their way home. They're almost out of food. He prays for food because they said, if you're a Christian, if you've got this connection with God, you should at least have us benefit from this. So they prayed, and they came across a bunch of wild pigs, and they were able to eat. So folks who are looking at my book, they'll see a wild pig in there that there's no explanation for it at all, but it's in the picture. And if you do the deep dive, you'll find that he comes home, he's reunited with his family. Everyone's happy. That was going to be the end of the story. But then the Lord sends another vision to him of an Irishman coming with a handful of letters and a call from Ireland saying, come back and walk among us again. And he takes that seriously as a call from the Lord, and then goes probably find some monastery somewhere, gets official training to be a minister of the gospel, and then goes back to Ireland and arrives first up in the north in Northern Ireland, and I believe ministers preaches to the High King's brother or son, I don't remember exactly which it is, but he converts and gives him a barn for his first church, and that's where his ministry starts, and he spends the rest of his life preaching and teaching to the Irish.
It's an incredible story. This is a guy who has every reason to say, you know, Lord, I appreciate the thought, but I don't think I'm going to go back to the place where they took me into slavery before. How do I know how do I know they won't grab me and enslave me again, you know, or kill me because escaped or something, you know?
Well, I mean, I think because he's coming back to a culture that is hostile to Christianity. I mean, it's not a safe place to be doing this work at all.
Right. That, of course, explains the title of the book, St. Patrick the Forgiver. This is this is one of his great traits, that he forgives and is so filled with the Holy Spirit that he can't just sit around and hope that things get better in Ireland. He has to go there. And I can imagine his family was less than thrilled at him getting back, and then before too long going, okay, well, I think I'll go back over there now. I'm sure that they were thinking, what? You just got home.
Well, yeah, there's no reason for him to go. I think I say in my the story, I say, he wouldn't go except for by the strength of heaven, and because there really was no reason for him to go back at all.
Yeah.
It just didn't make any sense.
Yeah, but not in human terms, but certainly in God's understanding and in his great plan. Who else but Patrick could have gone back and spoken to these folks and said, you know, about the love of God? Because when he goes back, he says, yes, you held me in captivity for almost a decade and against my will. And yet God loves you so much that he sent me to tell you about. I think one of the reasons that I like to make a big deal about St. Patrick every year is that he is a great role model for us as modern Christians. I think he's too important to be only thought of once a year, but if at least I can do it once a year, then that's what we'll do. You referenced some couple of books. One of them is one of my very favorite books. Since people know that I like to read a lot, and I've been reviewing books decades now, one of my favorite books still is Thomas Cahill's How the Irish Saved Civilization.
And, absolutely.
It's the outgrowth of the missionary thrust that Patrick did. It's a great book, and it's really an incredible idea, and he makes a very good case for it.
Oh yeah, I recommend that book to everybody. I think it's such an important book because his whole premise is without the Irish, we wouldn't have civilization. And Patrick is a big part of that with his missionary work. He set up monasteries, and really basically the Irish copied and saved all of Western civilization's documents and writings, and then they went and evangelized Europe during the Middle Ages. And yeah, we wouldn't have the culture we have, the history, and even Christianity would be very, very different without Patrick.
Well, it's a wonderful story. He's a fascinating person, and well worth note for modern Christians to know who Patrick was. That IBP Kids has plans for more books coming out this year. They've already had several come out. The first one was your St. Nicholas the Gift Giver, the history and legends of the real Santa Claus. This one's now available, and there are others that are coming this year, or ibpkids.org, or where do they go to find out more about these wonderful books?
Yeah, the IBP Kids they have a really good website. It's very easy to navigate and lots of good information. You can see there's some videos of me talking about the book. And another fun thing is you can download free coloring pages from both of those books if you go there. You can order through their website. You can order it online. I like to encourage people to find their local bookstore and order one of my books that way. It's, you know, kind of keeping the local bookstores alive.
Yeah.
There's a lot of different ways that you can get the book.
Excellent. I know how it works with authors, that after you finish a book, there's always another one that you're starting to work on. Do you want to say anything about what, or give us a little teaser about what might be coming next?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I was kind of excited. I posted some pictures of this new book online, and I told folks, what should I do next? And or asked folks what I should do next. And they, it was like universal. Everyone wanted St. Valentine. So that's what I'm working on next. So it'd
Excellent.
Be St. Valentine the Loving. And we'll do a deep dive. I mean, talk about stories of Christians from a long time ago.
Yeah.
Patrick is basically around the corner compared to Valentine. Valentine is the mid 200s. So
right.
I'm going way, way back for St. Valentine.
Yeah, that's before the Roman Empire declared Christianity to be a legal religion, even. So there were still
And that plays into the story because he he loses his head because of his stand for Christianity.
Yeah.
So it'll be interesting to see how I can make that a cute story.
Indeed. Well, Ned, I look forward to talking to you about your next book then.
And, I hope so.
Absolutely. Well, thank you very much for joining us again. Do you have your own website that you'd like to mention?
Oh, sure. Folks can find me on, Instagram. They can look me up and see what I'm making there. I'll post work in progress pictures from Valentine there. But my own website is called Worlds and Images. It's named after the island that they find in the Chronicles of Narnia, the Dawn Treader goes to the World's End. World's End Images is the name of my website, so folks can find me there as well.
Ned, thank you very much for talking to us today on the Bookshelf, and happy St. Patrick's
Day. Thank you, and to you, and to you.
And our thanks again to Ned Bustard, who is the author and the illustrator of St. Patrick the Forgiver from IVP Kids. And once again, you can go to their website and download free coloring pages for your kids to give them something special to do while you're reading them this book, enjoying the St. Patrick's holiday. So until next time, I'm your host, Dave Doc Kirby. Thanks for listening to our podcast on thebookshelf.podbean.com and to our radio show on The Bookshelf on WTBF, AM 970, FM 96.3, and FM 94.7. Until next time, God bless.
Oh, Danny boy, the pipes are calling from glen to glen and down the mountainside. The summer's gone. With snow.